It is 7:21 on Wednesday. Time now to talk to the KYMN National Security Specialist, retired Naval Intelligence Commander, adjunct professor at the at Carleton College, author extraordinaire, just all around good guy. Good morning, John Olson. How you doing?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. I'm doing well. I hope that you are as well.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you,
sir.
We're
dry, so that's all we can ask for.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
You know, I will always spend the week. Well, I'm going to pay attention to the news anyway, because that's just what I do. But I will always spend the week with half an eye to national, international issues and issues of national security, so that I can have a suggestion or two of what to talk about today. Hasn't been much happening, in the last week or so as far as something really pressing, but.
Let me just say that that's a function of what are the news outlets choosing to follow.
Well, there's a good point.
There are always things going
You're right. Well, and frankly, how much, what are the news outlets choosing to follow, and how much are the news outlets even being told about things too? So there's always but you and I were talking a couple of weeks ago, you brought up the Philippines and their concerns with China and Taiwan, and I had just seen an article in probably in New York Times about how the Prime Minister of the Philippines had essentially said, yeah, anything happens with between China and Taiwan, we're going to have to get involved, because basically what he said is we're next. But it's a far more complicated situation like that. So I thought maybe it might be a good today might be a good day to talk about expand this conversation about the South China Sea, and talk about the Philippines and how their situation relates not just to China and Taiwan, but of course to the U.S. as well.
Yeah. It's a great topic. I mean, for the listeners, I'm sure most of them know where the Philippines is located. But if they were to have a map up on a screen or on the table in front of them, and you look at the geostrategic location of the Philippines, it is in a critical location. Mm-hmm. In the Eastern Pacific and certainly near Southeast Asia. You mentioned the Philippines president. That's Ferdinand Marcos Jr. Oh. you remember his father and Imelda Marcos and the 10,000 pairs of shoes or whatever she had before they were ousted. So he is the president right now. And interestingly enough, his vice president is the former president Rodrigo Duterte's daughter.
Oh, really?
And they have had a very strained relationship from almost the moment they were sworn into office to lead the Philippines.
Interesting.
Because Rodrigo Duterte is in The Hague right now awaiting international crimes against humanity trials for the way he decided to fight the drug war in the Philippines. It was sort of like they rounded up people who they just thought were members of drug gangs, and some of it was summary street executions. I mean, it was like,
holy moly,
it was quite violent. Yeah, quite violent. And the Philippines, even though they're a strong democracy, they care deeply about, you know, voting rights and mm-hmm. things like that. They have had sort of almost really since before they even became a country, they have had the threat of terrorist groups throughout the nation. Both communist affiliated groups and also groups affiliated with kind of extremist Islam. So they have, you know, Abu Sayyaf and a couple of other groups that have Bang Samaro, Islamic Front and whatnot. They've sort of pledged loyalty to the Islamic State when Al Qaeda became, you know, not as big of a threat to the United States. So they have internal threats and they have external threats in the Philippines. Internal threats, not just from terrorism, but also from the political system fraying apart at the seams because of these the strains between the major groups that are in the country. So Ferdinand Marcos Jr. has some challenges on his hands as the president of the Philippines. Externally, the Philippines claims a number of the islands and reefs in the Spratly Islands group, which sits astride the, one of the most important sea lanes in the entire world, South China Sea. And they have had claim to those islands for a very, very long time. And what's funny is a lot of the island, or a lot of those, the Spratly Islands and the Parasol Islands groups in the South China Sea have had claimants from across the Southeast Asian nations. Taiwan actually had some claims down in the Spratly Islands, and there was a big typhoon that came through in 1978, I think it was. The Taiwanese troops evacuated the island, and the Philippines went in, swept it up, and said, it's ours now. They annexed it.
You left it there. We're just grabbing it up right off the...
Pretty much.
All right.
The one little shoal that is of great interest right now for the Philippines and for China is a place called Second Thomas Shoal. And it serves as sort of a key lookout facility for the Philippine military to try and keep track of what the Chinese are doing, because it's only, I don't know, 30 miles, 50, 20 miles away from a place called Mischief Reef, which is one of the places where the People's Liberation Army has dredged out a harbor and built an air base. So the Chinese have built, you know, pretty significant military bases on islands that they have seized down in the Spratlys. So on Second Thomas Shoal, the Philippine Navy took an old World War II era ship, renamed the Sierra Madre, and they ran it aground on Second Thomas Shoal, and it serves as a permanent lookout. Well, if you have people that are sitting there, military members who are sitting there observing what the Chinese are doing, you have to keep them resupplied.
Yeah.
You know, food, water, medical supplies, you know, toiletries, all that kind of stuff. So to get the supply vessels out there has become sort of running the gauntlet. And the Chinese Coast Guard, they're what they refer to as the maritime militia, essentially fishing boats that are sort of taking their orders from the military.
Yeah.
They do everything they can to interfere with those resupply runs on the part of the Philippine Navy and Coast Guard. So it has gotten pretty interesting. If you did a search on YouTube right now, looking for videos of you know, conflict at sea between the Philippines and China, you'd find all kinds of videos of Chinese vessels, both Coast Guard vessels and others, spraying water cannons at the Philippine vessels trying to resupply their troops.
Oh, really?
Or even doing what we call shouldering operations. Do you know what those are?
No.
That's where one ship literally rides up against the other ship and shoulders it out of the way.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
it's not exactly the kind of thing you want to do at sea, because if you do it the wrong way, things can go horribly wrong.
Yeah.
But it does happen, right?
John, I'm looking at pictures of that that ship that the Philippines put aground on Second Thomas Shoal.
Yeah, it's rusting out.
You're telling me that thing's a Philippine military base?
Well, I mean, it's a lookout post.
Okay, well, still, right? I mean, you're stationing troops on that? Good Lord.
Yeah, I know, right? All right. It's a gutsy move.
It is.
Gutsy move.
It is indeed.
Yep.
All right, anyway.
So the other thing that's interesting about this region is that, you know, the Philippines, it's an archipelago. It's like over 7,000 islands that make up the nation of the Philippines. And again, if you look on a map, the northernmost, you know, small little islands that are part of the Philippines are only like 60 some miles south of the southern tip of Taiwan.
Right.
So, you know, you raised the discussion point when you were doing the introduction here. China has been harassing Taiwan. We know this. The tensions have been ratcheting up. They're flying combat sorties all around Taiwan. They have PLA Navy ships that are doing circumnavigation of Taiwan, kind of harassing the Taiwanese military. The same things are happening continuously down in the Spratly Islands between China Philippines. Oh. So China is asserting their claim to the entire South China Sea through something they called the Nine-Dash Line. Have you ever heard that be discussed at all?
No, I've not heard of the Nine-Dash Line.
So the Nine-Dash Line basically runs from kind of the east side of Taiwan down along the Philippines border, across Malaysia, Brunei, and circles back up off Vietnam, basically back up to Hainan Island, okay, which is a fairly big island in southern China. And so the China's Nine-Dash Line maritime claim is everything inside that line is theirs. All of the Paracel Islands, all of the Spratly Islands, they claim to be theirs.
Oh.
And they have used their military and their Coast Guard, the maritime militia, the fishing fleets, to basically force the other nations to try and or force the other nations to accept their claims. Now, the Philippines and China went to the international court, and China lost flat out in that ruling back in 2016, I think it was, because it doesn't comply in any way, shape, or form with what's called the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea.
Okay.
So once that was adopted globally by most nations, interestingly enough, not the United States, because our Senate has ratified that, but most nations in the world accept the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, including China. They were a signatory. But those claims are completely illegitimate under the UN Convention.
Okay.
Claiming those islands has to have some connection to the continental shelf, and usually within the 200 nautical mile exclusive economic zone. And this whole claim is completely complete nonsense.
Is there any sort of rationale for it other than China wants that territory?
Well, you know, it's called the South China Sea for a reason, right?
Okay.
I mean, if you look at the history matters. Yeah. What countries controlled certain areas and during the course of history. Mm-hmm. And from China's perspective, from Beijing's perspective, they have a legitimate historical claim to the region. In the modern era, we don't really accept a lot of those historical claims anymore, right? It's based on UN agreements and things like that in the modern era.
You're telling me we don't really care much about what the Chen Dynasty had as far
exactly.
as...
Exactly. Yeah, okay. That's exactly right. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Got it.
So what's interesting about the South China Sea is because so much maritime shipping transits through that region, through the Strait of Malacca, coming from the Middle East, especially, you know, oil, that kind of thing, because mm-hmm. most of the island nations, they don't produce their own energy. They have to import it from elsewhere. Japan, especially the Philippines, Taiwan, etc. They all need oil from elsewhere. So coming from the Middle East through the Strait of Malacca, heading up through the South China Sea to ports all along the east or all along the Western Pacific. So Japan is deeply interested in what's happening in the South China Sea. South Korea is interested. Taiwan is interested. The United States is interested because we care about free trade and movement of goods, you know, commodities and whatnot are all around the world. So the United States exercises what's called freedom of navigation operations on a routine basis. We do not really observe China's claims to all the Spratly and Paracel Islands in the South China Sea.
Okay.
And we routinely transit Navy combatant ships through that region, and our maritime patrol aircraft will fly very near all of the Chinese claimed islands just to basically say, hey, these are not yours. These are international waters, and that's what we think of your claim, kind of a thing,
okay.
Right?
All right.
So, interestingly enough, in the Paracel Islands, which is to the northwest of the Spratlys, it's southeast of Hainan Island, it's northeast of Vietnam. Vietnam has had claims to certain elements of the Paracel Islands, and Vietnam and China actually shot at each other at sea over some of the claims to these islands, and China basically forced Vietnam out.
Really?
This happened back in the 80s, I think, okay. or early 80s. So early to mid 80s. So that's sort of been a not so much a settled deal, but they haven't come to blows in a very long time. And right now, because of the tariff conflict that's going on, mm-hmm. you know, that the U.S. instituted, mm-hmm. you have a lot of our trading partners over in the Western Pacific who suddenly are looking more closely at creating a favorable trade relationship with China, because it's become suddenly not nearly as profitable to export stuff to the United States, right, even though they would like to do business with the United States. Right. So,
and the Philippines is one of those countries that's got a pretty, I mean, is China their most their biggest trade partner, or is it right behind the U.S.? I don't remember.
So most of those countries in Southeast Asia have a pretty strong trade relationship with China. Okay. And in fact, there are a lot of countries around the world who have shifted away from the U.S. as their number one export market, and now it's China. Of the 54 countries on the African continent in 2002. I think the U.S. was the primary trading partner for 50 of them. And I think today only like four of them are the U.S. is their primary market. The other 50 trade with China predominantly.
That's
an example. Yeah, the global shift that's taking place has been stunning. And that's also true in the Western Pacific. We still have a really strong security relationship with the Philippines. Mm-hmm. This goes back to a mutual defense treaty from like 1951.
Okay.
When the Korean War got going, the Philippines said, hey, let's partner up with the United States. So we had bases that we used in the Philippines up until like 1991. Clark Air Base, which was buried when Mount Pinatubo blew. There was a typhoon that came in there shortly after and really hammered the facilities that used at the time.
Okay.
So we sort of left the Philippines for quite a while, but they have invited us back in rather recently, and now there are a number of bases, 8 or 9 different places in the Philippines where we are basing troops or aircraft in partnership with the Philippines themselves. And the other thing that I find really interesting is the Philippines has really taken on board the idea that they need to bolster and build their own military capabilities, because mm-hmm. China is literally knocking on their front door every single day in the Spratly Islands.
Right.
They have purchased military equipment from countries around the world. I mean, they have French-made missiles. They have stuff from South Korea and Israel and India.
Wow.
I mean, they have all kinds of things that they are buying.
Okay.
So that they have an inventory of weapons that they can use to defend their national security interests, even if the U.S. isn't there for whatever reason. I mean, we have a pretty strong agreement now under what's called the U.S.-Philippines Enhanced Defense Cooperation mm-hmm. Agreement mm-hmm. that was signed back in 2014. But, who knows, right? I mean, depending upon the situation, we could be really, really busy someplace else and may not have enough resources to respond to challenges that the Philippines faces. So they want to be prepared to defend their own interests.
Sure, sure. I guess that's sort of my question, too, is that these bases that we've put into the Philippines recently, the 8 or 9 locations.
Those are Philippine bases, but they're allowing us to use those facilities. And obviously we're throwing a little money at it to help improve those bases. So there's mutual benefit there.
Okay. So that's my question. What kind of resources are we putting into this? And do we look at the Philippines as a key strategic location
in case we have to
come to the aid of Taiwan?
Well, not just Taiwan, but any crisis that might happen in the Western Pacific, the Philippines becomes a really good forward staging location. Obviously, if China were to try to invade Taiwan or blockade Taiwan, the Philippines is probably the closest location where we could stage some sort of a surface action group or military force to try and take the pressure off Taiwan if the U.S. political leadership decided that that's what we were going to do.
Okay.
And the Philippines knows that. I mean, they're not kind of all in on the defense of Taiwan, sort of the way Japan and Australia and the U.S. have been, and even to a certain extent South Korea. But they recognize that if something were to happen to Taiwan, like you said in the opening, the Philippines might be next. Certainly their claims in the Spratly Islands could be next.
Right.
So they're interested in their own defense and mutual defense agreements, especially with the United States.
Interesting. So one more question, and then we've got to get going. But President Marcos, his rivalry with his vice president aside, does the U.S. see him as a trustworthy guy? And there's sort of two sides of that question. A, is he really someone that wants to work with the United States? And secondly, does he have a lot of the habits that his parents had? And is there any danger of President Marcos getting run out for the same kind of corruption that his parents had?
So I don't think he's not like his father. Okay. His mom and dad were horribly corrupt.
Yes, they were.
I mean,
right.
You and I are old enough to remember all that stuff,
yes,
right?
Yeah. And they didn't do a good job of hiding it either. I mean, they were fairly flagrant.
Yeah, his mother Imelda is 95 years old now, so she's still around. Now Sara Duterte, the vice president. Her father, during his time in office, really tried to move the Philippines more towards China.
Okay.
And the Philippine people were not really excited about that idea. Okay. They want trade, but they don't want to be dominated by Beijing. Really, none of the countries in Southeast Asia or the Western Pacific want to be dominated by China, but they do recognize the benefits of a strong trade relationship. So Duterte moved the country more towards China. Marcos was elected, you know, along with Sara Duterte as his vice president, and he has aggressively moved the Philippines back into alignment more with the liberal democratic order of the West and a good, strong relationship with the United States.
Got it. All right. John, I let these conversations go on way too long because they're so interesting. But we appreciate it, sir. And always thank you for your time. And we will talk to you again next week. All right?
All right. Have a good one.
Thanks, John. Take care.
Bye-bye.
John Olson with the KYMN National Security Specialist.